will seem less sunny. It'll probably get druggy and the kids will seem too skinny. There's gonna come a time when she's gonna have to go with whoever's gonna get her the highest. There's gonna come a time when the true scene leaders will forget where they differ and get big picture, cause the kids at the shows, they'll have kids of their own. The sing-along songs will be our scriptures. We gotta stay positive. We gotta stay positive. We gotta stay positive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Holy Commutes podcast for Monday, April 6, 2020. My name is Paul Cook, and I'll be your host each Monday morning throughout April as Holy Commutes embarks on its third season. Holy Commutes is, of course, the only daily morning show dedicated to all things wiffle ball. You can follow the show on Twitter at Holy Commutes. Remember, that's Holy with an E. H-O-L-E-Y Commutes. I'd like to start by extending a big thank you to the Holy Commutes and National Wiffle team, Trent Steffes, Tom Gannon, Gus Skibby, all the other hosts, for an opportunity to talk about wiffle ball with everyone once a week this month. I was a daily listener to the show during the first two seasons in October and January. I love the concept and the mix of personalities involved, and I'm really excited to be involved this month. It's a great concept, and it's great to see the show continue even during, you know, these really, really odd circumstances and times we're living through right now. So before we jump into stuff, just a little background on myself. Like I said, my name's Paul Cook, and along with my brother Tim and our friend Nick Shirey, I currently help run Mid-Atlantic Wiffle. Mid-Atlantic Wiffle is a tournament-based wiffle ball organization that hosts tournaments in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and this year we will hopefully be adding New York to that list. Competitive wiffle ball has been a significant part of my life for many, many years. Tim and I played our first tournament with a couple childhood friends way back on, it's coming up here on the anniversary, May 16th, 1998, when I was only in middle school. And almost 22 years later, the game still eats up a significant chunk of my time, and a significant chunk of my life. So it's been an important part of my life from a teenager on through, basically all my adult life. From 1998 through 2004, I played on the Stompers, which was a team that my brother Tim founded with a couple of our friends. We were all living in Maryland at the time. I think all four of the original members were still living in Maryland. But we're all from the D.C. suburbs, but we traveled all over the Mid-Atlantic region to play Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, sometimes up to New England. That was in addition to hosting our own tournaments in our own hometown. Under the Maryland Wiffle Ball Association moniker, which we did from 1998 through 2001. We weren't necessarily good in those early days, but we loved to play. You know, everyone's got a story like that. We kept traveling, kept playing, and over time got a little better each year. We only had one pitcher, but he started, getting better. Things started to come together. And then in 2002, we got a break where this guy we had met the year before by the name of Nick Schaefer, he was leaving the team he was on because they were going to go play in New England, and he was from New Jersey and preferred to play, a little closer down to New Jersey, Pennsylvania area. So he joined us, and between adding Nick and between the progress that the other three of us had made, and mainly our one pitcher Dan had made over the years, everything came together in 2002. We were briefly ranked the number one team in the country that year by one of the major governing bodies at the time, the USPPBA. We ended up finishing sixth in the country that year. 2003, we finished third in the Fast Plastic New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania region. And then we finished third at the Fast Plastic National Championship tournament that October, which was kind of our height from a team perspective. And probably I think it goes for all of us. I know it's true for me. It's probably my wiffle ball high points in terms of being on the field, in terms of on-field accomplishments. All that playing, though, over the prior 6-7 years kind of burnt us out. So from 2005 on, over the next decade, we only played maybe once a year as a team. then we had a, but even when we weren't playing, you know, there's always a, the passion, you know, we had for the game never really went away. I was always writing different things, you know, keeping up to date on stuff. It was just more sort of, you know, we all go through this at one time or another where your life kind of moves you away from wiffle ball for a little while. But often, you know, most of us boomerang back, and I boomeranged back in 2016, 2017. We got put in touch with Nick Shirey, got an opportunity to do something there, and we jumped at it, and MAW was formed. And that's sort of, you know, been our big wiffle, my big wiffle ball thing ever since. I played two seasons in MAW on the Stompers. Last year I didn't play much, just a couple fill-ins here and there, but really just sort of, you know, helping run things behind the scenes and on tournament day. And you know, I know when most people stop playing, they kind of you know, leave the game, that's it for them, but I really enjoy doing all this other stuff around, and it's been a lot of fun to see the game from a different perspective, and have, you know, no desire to stop that anytime soon. Also, the last thing I'll mention is I've always been interested in the history of wiffle ball, and what's going on in the contemporary wiffle ball world beyond whatever little section of it I'm involved in at the time. From a historical perspective, in high school I wrote a history of competitive fast pitch wiffle ball as my senior class project. It wasn't much of a paper, but it was a lot of pages, and that's, you know, that's usually good enough in high school to get you an A, so I got an A, and that was, you know, that was fine. But I was always kind of disappointed that I never really sort of, I always liked that idea of going back and you know, writing a real detailed history or histories on different eras of the game. So that's always stayed in my mind since then, and I've worked on a bunch of different things in the years since, and I've got a couple things I'm pretty close to finishing in terms of historical, you know, written pieces that hopefully, cross my fingers, will be done this year. And along those same lines, in terms of like interest of in what's going on contemporarily in other parts of the wiffle ball world, I've done the Drop 100 the past 2 years, which is original intent was supposed to be a spotlight of 100 players from all across the country, just using a ranking format as a you know, delivery device for it. So I've done that the past 2 years. You know, I think it's largely been well received. I know I've enjoyed it. I've learned a lot about a lot of different players. So I've seen a lot of good wiffle ball during that time, and hopefully it's been informative for other people. And that'll likely be back this year too, just, you know, depending on how much wiffle ball actually gets played this summer. So with that said, you know, in terms of how much wiffle ball will get played this summer, I just want to real quickly here, before we jump into the main topic, I wanted to take a minute to talk a little about the coronavirus pandemic and everything going on right now, because how can you not? It's a big elephant in the room. It has to be mentioned. So, you know, the last few weeks, I think, for all of us, have brought a lot of major changes in our lives. Like, I mean, this is the smallest of small examples, but my plan was to record these podcasts in April on my 2 mile walk into work that I do each morning. But, you know, for the last 3 weeks, my commute's been more like 2 feet, just, you know, the space between my bed and my home office desk. You know, I think a lot of us have had, you know, a lot of us, people have, you know, circumstances like that where we've, you know, working from home, just everything sort of, you know, flipped upside down. We've all had our lives interrupted in both major and minor ways because of the pandemic. And naturally, that extends to wiffle ball. A lot of groups have already canceled or postponed events, including MAW. And the truth, the uncomfortable truth, is none of us really know when the time will come when it will be socially responsible to start, you know, gathering in the large groups that we have at, you know, league nights or at tournaments, and to do the sort of the types of social interactions that, you know, are inherent in wiffle ball. And that, you know, that frankly sucks. It's that unknown, you know, it's not fun to deal with. And, you know, for a lot of us, wiffle ball, you know, is a big part of our athletic and social lives, and having that, you know, taken from us with no definitive timetable, you know, for return, isn't very fun. But it also, you know, is what it is. We, you know, we're all looking for some sort of return to normalcy, but it's, you know, it's going to have to come when it comes. and, you know, as uncomfortable as that may be. So I just wanted to say, you're not alone if you're missing wiffle ball now. I think we all are. I think we're all sort of disappointed that this is the time of the year where we would all be getting ready to go out. And it doesn't look like, you know, that's going to happen in April. And we'll just have to, take it a day at a time, a week at a time, a month at a time. But in the meantime, I hope everyone, is doing their best. Just take care of yourselves, take care of everyone around you. That's really what's most important now. You know, wiffle ball will be back at some point. And, the last few years have taught me there's a lot of creative, passionate people running leagues and tournaments all over the country. So, there's no doubt in my mind that, when it's feasible to do so and when wiffle ball can come back, that everyone will find the best ways to make the best out of, what's going to be most likely be a significantly shortened outdoor calendar. So, everyone, take care of yourselves out there, and just know that missing wiffle ball and just having all this uncertainty going along and all the feelings that go along with it, you're not alone. So, with that said, what I wanted to talk about a little bit today is that even though it looks like the start of the 2020 outdoor calendar is going to be delayed in most places, maybe significantly so, there already has been a lot of wiffle ball played in 2020 indoors, both in 2020 and at the tail end of 2019. So I thought, today I've kept my eye on a bunch of this different stuff, maybe go through a recap sort of the, I guess what you could call the 2019-2020 indoor wiffle ball season, go through some tournaments and leagues that you may not know about, some sort of under the radar one, some sort of bigger tournaments, and then at the end, take a look at some of the names and teams that maybe played in multiple places during the indoor season, and played really well, or just any sort of things that stood out to me. So I think the first big event on the indoor wiffle ball calendar in 2019-2020 was MLW's Battle of Boston tournament. This tournament took place December 21st and 22nd in Weymouth, Massachusetts. That city's got a little bit of a history with competitive wiffle ball. For one year out of the four years that the World Wiffle Ball Association tournament took place, from 1989 to 1992. One of those years, 1990, the tournament was held in Weymouth, Massachusetts. So that's got a little bit of a wiffle ball background. This tournament was obviously put on by the MLW guys. This was their first stop in Boston, and I think it was their third tournament of 2019. They had their annual Michigan one, then a Long Island tournament, then this one in Boston. Rules were usual MLW rules, yellow bats, a little bit of a closer mound distance, within 35 feet, smaller sort of, I guess sometimes we call them pizza shaped fields, yellow bats, scuff balls, that usual sort of MLW style, for lack of a better term. Like all MLW tournaments, do really well in the 15 and older age division. There were 21 teams. In the 11 to 14 year old division, there were 12 teams, so that's 33 total. In the 11 to 14 division, the Meadow Boys from New Hampshire won that. Coming in second place was the New England Hurricanes. Interesting story about the Hurricanes. So those kids, I think two of them were 13 or 14, and then one was 11, and they were all three brothers, or two out of three were brothers, something like that. But right in that age group, really young, and like all of us, after our first tournament experience, they were hyped, and they couldn't wait, to get back out on the field and play some more wiffle ball. So they got in touch. So this, obviously the MLW tournament was end of December, and our MAW Winter Classic indoor tournament was scheduled for February. So they ended up getting in touch with us, wanting to play, and you know, which puts in that tough situation of, okay, yeah, these kids are very, very young. Obviously, they played well. They finished, you know, second in that tournament. But they're playing against, you know, kids their own age. They wanted to know if we had a younger division. We don't. I think MLW these days are really the only guys that do the different age divisions. So you're sort of in a tough situation where, yeah, you know, it's going to be tough for any 11 to 14 year old to compete against, you know, guys that have been playing for years in their 20s or whatever, or, you know, or high school athletes. So that, you know, situation of not, of wanting, you know, wanting another team to come out, but not wanting these guys to come out and have a bad experience. But, you know, Jim was very honest with them in terms of the level of competition. They asked good questions. They decided they still wanted to do it, but there was only going to be two of them available. So we were able to hook them up. Another team of from MAW, the Barrel Bruisers, Chris Owen and Jerry Hill from Northern Virginia, you know, really good guys. They were looking to play too. So we kind of put those, you know, those two teams together. And they played, you know, at the tournament. And, you know, the Hurricanes, that team went 0-3. You know, I don't think either of the kids on the Hurricanes, you know, did much hitting wise, but, you know, they were excited to be there. They knew what the level of competition was going to be, and that didn't scare them away. I think we hear, you know, a lot of times about, you know, people being scared away from the competition, you know, from seeing videos online or just knowing what the competition is going to be. You know, it's real impressive. These kids are, you know, nice kids, just went out there, competed, had fun, didn't have too big of expectations, you know, had a good time. And that's really what it's all about. And also, you know, it also speaks well of their, you know, their teammates and Chris and Jerry, who, you know, who made them feel, you know, comfortable and, you know, had a good time out there. And, you know, they all just competed. So I think, you know, those kids have a real passion for the game. I'm sure they're going to be at, you know, whatever MLW does this year or next year in their neck of the woods. We hope, you know, we hope to see them our way, or, you know, Golden Stick, or, you know, wherever they want to go. But the, you know, they showed a lot of promise, and they had a lot of fun, and they got, you know, they're the exact kind of players that we're always sort of looking for in the game. So hats off to them. In the 15 plus division, I think of MLW's tournament so far, even though they held one on Long Island, there's obviously a lot of, you know, veteran wiffle ball talent from, you know, Golden Stick and, you know, whatever else. I think this tournament by far had the most participation from sort of veteran wiffle ballers. There are a bunch of New England, Golden Stick, you know, veteran names, guys like Brian DiNapoli, Rob Sutton, Mike Toohey, Dan Haverty, and there was Tom Gannon. There were players from all over the place. The finals came down to two teams, you know, made up of a bunch of those veteran players. The Diamondbacks, which were the Torres brothers, Garrett and Devin, along with Kenny Stengel, which is basically the Palisades Diamondbacks over the last so many years. And they went up against the well-named Paul Cook School of Wiffle Ball, which is Jimmy Cole, Jordan Robles, Vin Lee, and Kyle von Schlossigen. Paul Cook School of Wiffle Ball won behind, I think Jordan pitched that finals. They beat the Diamondbacks 4-2 and took home that tournament title. Everyone I talked to there who went to that tournament said, you know, it's a real fun time, that the MLW guys, you know, run a smooth show, and, you know, and they do a real good job. There's no sort of, the great thing about MLW is there's no sort of gatekeeping. I think that's been a major problem in wiffle ball, more or less its whole existence, competitive wiffle ball, that is there, you know, there tends to be this gatekeeping of, oh, you're a professional player, you're a better player, you know, whatever it is. All the guys there from different places, and the MLW guys too, it's just, you know, they're all just playing wiffle ball, and they're all just trying to, you know, learn from each other and, you know, grow everything together. And it's, you know, great to see. So another good tournament from those guys, and a pretty exciting final. So the second group I want to talk about is this is a winter indoor league, the CrossFit Old Town Winter Wiffle League. This is a third year of, no, fourth year of this league. It's in Alexandria, Virginia, and it's held in a CrossFit gym in Old Town, Alexandria. And it's run by Jerry Hill, who I mentioned earlier, played with the Connecticut Hurricanes in the MAW Winter Classic. He owns the gym and he runs that league. So the gym itself is, you know, if you've seen a CrossFit gym, it looks like any other CrossFit gym. It's just sort of like a box, you know, rectangular type, you know, not too big, not high ceiling, you know, one room area. So they clear out, you know, whatever equipment is in there during the day. And they basically set up, you know, their field with, you know, in this little box area. So it's, you know, you have walls in play, you've got all these different, you know, all these interesting little rules that come out of, you know, having such small confines. Like there's some rule where if you hit it, I forget exactly what it is, but like there's a bathroom, I think on the left side of the field, and if you hit the wall, the bathroom doesn't go all the way up to the ceiling. So if you hit the ball somehow over that wall and into the bathroom, it's like whatever, it's like a triple or something. But like there's lots of little fun things like that that, you know, kind of remind me of like playing wiffle ball in you know, gym classes, you know, in elementary school or whatever. They tried out a bunch of different rules over the years. A couple of years ago they went with cup balls and big barrel bats, but that sort of got voted out, and this year they were back to clean balls and yellow bats. There's some, you know, despite sort of the, you know, the odd setting and the rules that have to be in place in order to, you know, in order to play in that odd setting, the games can get pretty competitive, and there's some really good players there. Jerry and his teammate Chris Owen, who both play on the Barrel Bruisers in Mid-Atlantic, obviously both really good. But what's kind of cool about what happened this year in the league is, you know, even though those guys were, you know, still two of the better players, still on top of the leaderboards in most categories, both Chris's team and Jerry's team failed to make the finals. Two other teams did. It was a four-team league this year, led by a couple good players, Mike Brum from Upper Deck, Jake Stover from Closing Time. He's a real hard thrower, kind of just throws a fastball, but, you know, legit velocity. From I think their mound's, you know, 42 feet to the strike zone, so something like that. So it's a decent distance. But yeah, they stream all their games on Facebook. If you want to go back and check those out, just type in CFOT Winter Wiffle into Facebook and you'll find it. A lot of fun games. Unfortunately, like some other leagues, they had to close up shop before the season ended. They got to the finals and then, you know, Virginia, like many states, have shut down non-essential businesses, so the gym had to close, and they haven't gotten the finals in yet, but hopefully that'll take place sooner rather than later, and they can finish out their season. But really fun league, that's produced some players that have played elsewhere, and that has produced players that definitely could play elsewhere if they wanted to. Check it out. It's worth your time, I think. So that league ran from like January through, I think, early March before they got shut down. So skipping back a little bit to late February, was the MAW Winter Classic. This was a 16-team tournament, which took place at In the Net, which is a big baseball softball complex in Pennsylvania, right outside of Harrisburg or Hershey, if you're familiar with that area. It was won by POC, which is a team that formed in MAW late last season, and then added a couple different guys for this tournament. So it was Johnny Costa, better known as Johnny Whiffs, Tim Beck from the Lemonheads, which is a team that plays has played historically both in MAW and Golden Stick Yard in New York. So Tim Beck, Johnny Costa, Pete Slater, veteran wiffball player, Phil Frischello, veteran wiffball player, and Dan Whitener, who's just a really good all-around player right now, like maybe one of the better all-around players right now that I've seen personally. So POC took that down by beating the Fingerballs in the finals. This was the third straight year the Fingerballs have made the finals only to lose. So always Cinderella for them. But I like how they keep that team's run by Chris Sarno, and I like how he's changed the roster a little bit over the years. But I like how they keep playing under that name. Him and Ben Stan have been the core of that team. They keep coming back, trying to win it year after year. And I'm sure if this event takes place next year, and we plan on that happening, I'm sure they'll be back, to try to go for it a fourth time and hopefully get over that hump. But like a lot of really good players. We were real happy with the 16 teams. This is our third Winter Classic for MAW, and we've gone from we could take a maximum 8 the first year because we were in a smaller place, and we got 8, and then 12 last year, and again that was our maximum, and we hit it. This year we're 16 max, and we hit that. So it's been real nice growth. The nice thing about this facility is it's big enough where we can do full size fields, 90 degree fields, without having to compromise at all, and that's really fun. It was a little challenging. Last year we played in a different building. This complex has one sort of like indoor dome area building that's, a real building, and it stays up all year long. And then this year on one of their outdoor turf fields, they constructed a blow up air dome over one of the turf fields in January. So that's where they moved us this year. And it's actually nicer because the turf is nicer and the lights were a little bit better. But because it's air pressured, because you blow up these walls with air pressure, like a bouncy castle or whatever, you can't just there's not just normal doors and you can't keep doors open. So there's like a revolving door that everyone's supposed to walk through, and then there are doors you can open to come through, but you have to close them pretty quickly because or else stuff's going to start deflating. And when you open these doors, the air pressure, because of the air pressure, it's basically like a wind tunnel. So we had these fences we had to transport in, and you're trying to get them in through the door with literally this wind just pushing you straight back. Like, I mean, these are some pretty athletic guys that are trying to take these fences in, and just getting pushed straight back. It's blowing your glasses off. It's blowing your hats off. So that was fun. That was some fun we didn't anticipate, but everything worked out okay. Yeah, and on that note, I'd like to thank, because I don't think we've done this at least on audio form, thank the people that helped us out getting all those fences through the door and stuff. Everybody on the short balls, Vinny, Teddy, Frankie, Joey, they really did the bulk of that work coming in. Rich Tyler helped us out tremendously at the end, taking them out. Tom Gannon helped out big time. Tom's always willing to help out with that stuff, with setting up and tearing down. So thanks to those guys, because that was a bit of a challenge, but we got it done without any problem, in large part thanks to their help. I won't spend a lot of time on this one because I know Austin and Trent may have some stuff to say about, almost definitely have some stuff to say about MNWA on their Wednesday shows. But MNWA, which is the Minnesota Wolfball Association, moved their league to a late winter, early spring indoor schedule this year, which I think is really cool, especially, considering how most, if not all of those guys, I think, also play in HRL. So it kind of gives you a nice... It doesn't overload. If they both run at the same time, it kind of, it could potentially overload people. I think that was a really good idea to move to the spring and indoor. A bunch of those games are up on YouTube. I think Mini Whiffs is their YouTube channel name. I've watched all of them at least once. We've had a lot of wiffle ball now. I think I've gone back and done some repeats, but some really good players. The videos were all put together. It's a good easy watch, and it was like a good fun time. Unfortunately, like the CFOT Old Town League, MNWA also didn't get to finish their season because of the coronavirus. So that's currently suspended and up in the air. But I hope, when the time's right, they'll be able to get back out there and wrap things up. But I really enjoyed watching what they put out there, and you know, I would love to have something like that close to me during the winter time, during normal circumstances, because it looked like a lot of fun. So another tournament I want to mention, another indoor tournament, was the GSWL Gall Draft Tournament. So this was in Carmel, New York, at the Carmel Sports Club. It was put on by the Golden Stick New York guys, Rob and Anthony, and everyone else involved with them. And it was sort of an offshoot of their fall outdoor league, the Gall Fall Outdoor League, which is their outdoor league over there on Long Island. So this was kind of a cool format. It was a draft style tournament. So there was eight captains that paid like a higher entry fee. I forget exactly what it was. But by paying that entry fee, they also got a wooden yard style bat from Babs Big Fly Bats. It's a guy, if you've ever heard of him, he's a guy out in California that makes wooden wiffle ball bats, both a big barreled model and then a skinnier barrel model for, medium pitch, yard style, slow pitch style. So it's kind of a cool thing where, if you're a captain, you play a little more, but you also get to draft a team and you get this custom bat. They do really cool sort of customizations, Babs does, on these bats. So you got that also. And then if you just wanted to be drafted, it was a much lesser entry fee. They got 40 players in total, which made for nice eight 5-person teams, medium pitch, like I said. The finals were the Screwballs versus Mamba Mentality. Mamba Mentality, which Mike Casada was the captain of that team. It was him, Mike Tui, Mike Valenti, Nick Valenti, and Anthony. I don't have a last name here. They beat the Screwballs. I'm gonna screw up some of these names. I'm gonna say, rather than try these guys' last names, I'm just gonna say Johnny C and Jerry C. Dan was another name I was told. Brian Falcon and Danny Hargadin, they came in second. So some of that stuff, some of the live streams of that stuff is up on Golden Stick's Facebook page. Check that out. That also looked like a fun time. I'm always interested when these draft style tournaments are able to draw well, because I think that really sort of speaks to. I think if organizations are able to do that, I think it speaks to the culture they've cultivated, the environment that they've cultivated, that guys want to play and are comfortable playing and are willing to play with guys that they don't normally play with, guys that they aren't friends with. That's when you've got a real sort of welcoming community. So, hats off to those guys to being able to get 40 players for that tournament. And last couple ones here, I just want to mention real quick, MLW, in addition to their Battle of Boston tournament, they also actually had a winter league closer to their home base in Michigan. It was at the Legacy Center in Michigan. And I think it was a six-team league. Trench and Trains lost to Livonia City Wiffle in the finals. That's another really cool thing. One of the things MLW built into that is any players that played in that league were eligible for MLW's regular season 2020 draft. And that's just another, really, really cool thing that, those guys, Kyle Schultz and those guys thought of up there to, slowly expand what they've got going, sort of slowly expand their base. So I don't think there's much clips out there of anything or, stats or anything like that. But what I saw on Instagram and stuff, it looked like another fun MLW event. And there's a couple other quick little ones that came across. So I want to mention Big League Dreams is a venue in Medford, New Jersey, where they got two permanent indoor wiffle ball fields there. We actually held the first MAW Winter Classic at that facility. One of the fields is a replica of Citizens Bank Park in Philly. The other is a Fenway, because it's always a Fenway, it seems like. And it's a really cool venue. You know, they got the Green Monster in there. You know, Citizens Bank actually looks like it. And it's just a it's just a really neat venue. I think the only sort of downside to it possibly is that for certain styles of play, the fields are a little small. If you're using big barrel bats, it's probably a little bit small. But they run adult leagues there pretty regularly, and they ran one in the fall, winter this year. I know some of the Ridley Park guys played in that, and I don't think they did very well, which I think speaks to you know, some of the competition in that league. It's medium pitch, I think, leaning towards slow pitch. But you know, we've seen different players that have played in those leagues. You know, they're pretty good. It's a really cool venue. If you live anywhere near that, you know, it's something worth checking out. And it's one of those places that if you're a big Wiffle Ball fan, it's worth supporting, because that is a Wiffle Ball facility. That is what it is. So check them out if you're in the southern New Jersey area. And then a couple up in New England, there was the NEAWL Winter Wiffle League. This was won by the Raleigh Finger Bangs, who were with Tom Gannon on that team. And then another New England indoor league was the Recess Winter League. And like Big League Dreams, this Recess place has a permanent wiffle ball field in there. I also think it's a Green Monster too field. So they have adult leagues. They had a winter league, and that was also won by a Tom Gannon led team, of course. So yeah, just a couple of different, you know, neat places. I'm sure there's places in other parts of the country that, you know, have these permanent wiffle ball fields and stuff indoors, but those are always interesting to me. And again, you know, it's always something to support if you can in any way, if you're in those areas, because that's, you know, that's the kind of cool stuff we dream of. So you know, support them if you can in any way. So I was thinking about, you know, I was about standout team and in a notable, or a standout player in a notable team from what I guess you could call the, you know, the indoor season. So really the only crossover was probably between the three Northeast tournaments, MLW, Gall, and MAW. Anything else, you know, besides for Tom Cannon, there was really no crossover in the New England ones. So if you had teams or players playing in multiple ones, they were probably playing in, two of those three or three of those three. So I would say my standout player from the indoor season is Devin Torres. He led the Diamondbacks to a second place finish at the MLW tournament, and then he helped the Finger Balls to a second place finish at the MAW Winter Classic. Pitched, you know, big games down the stretch for both tournaments. Lost in the finals, you know, pitching in both tournaments, but you know, pitched well before then. Hit, you know, he's the only guy to make it to a finals in, you know, two out of those three tournaments, or really, you know, two out of any three tournaments or leagues that took place over the winter. So I think if you're looking for a player of the indoor season, it was probably Devin. And the one team I want to mention is the OG Goon Squad. This is one of the few teams to play as their same team, to play in multiple indoor tournaments or leagues, at least that I know of, this past year. And they competed in the MLW Battle of Boston tournament. They finished fourth. They lost to the Diamondbacks, I think like 4-2, pretty close score in the semifinals. And then they finished ninth in the MAW Winter Classic. They lost to the New York Meets in a play-in game before the quarterfinals. So they went 2-1 in pool play before then. So they played really well in both of those tournaments. These guys are from Pennsylvania. It's a trio, real good guys, real good competitors. You know, probably only going to get better with more experience. All three guys pitch, which is, you know, awesome. And of all the teams that played in at least one indoor event this year, they probably had the best multiple event track record. So hats off to them. So that's I think that's all I have yet for the indoor season. You know, if you're looking for wiffle ball to watch, you're looking for current wiffle ball to watch, you know, like I said, most of these places, basically everything I mentioned besides, maybe besides the MLW Winter League, there's at least some video out there. I know on the National Wiffle YouTube channel, Tom put up highlights of both of the New England leagues that he played in, you know, and everything else. MLW's got a Battle of Boston recap video up there. MAW's got some highlight videos on our YouTube channel, and some full game and some, you know, condensed games from the Winter Classic. CFOT on their Facebook channel has live stream games. MNWA on their YouTube channel has condensed games. If you go to GSWL's Facebook, there's some stuff on there from their indoor tournament. So, you know, it may be a little while before we get some new wiffle ball footage, so that's some good stuff to check out if you haven't already. Thanks for joining me on my first foray here on the Holy Commutes. I'm not quite sure what we'll do next time, but I've got a few ideas. Like I said, I'm big into wiffle ball history, so we may sort of go down that route. And if I get too tired of just talking by myself, we may have a few guests over the next few weeks, but I'll play it by ear. Tomorrow, Caleb Yonkman will be back for his second go around here on Holy Commutes, and he'll be working Tuesdays. So make sure you give him a listen tomorrow morning. And always remember, you can download Holy Commutes on any podcasting platform. And make sure you follow us for any updates and when new shows come out on Twitter at Holy Commutes. That's Holy with an E. At Holy Commutes on Twitter. Follow us there. Subscribe on any podcast platform. And we'll see you next time.